Raising Playful Tots, show number 125. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you could stop by today. My name is Melitza, and welcome to The Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids, so that we can introduce a new play idea. If you're new to the show, welcome. And hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room, so come join us as we go on a shape hunt looking for circles, thanks to an idea from Learning to Play and Playing to Learn. Last week's show, it was a resource-packed show sharing new ebook reads, new books, and conversation all about colouring with kids. Yes, colouring with kids. So if you missed that one, then pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show, I'm talking to Noelle Janice Norton, author of Calmer, Easier, Happier Parenting. Noelle was on show 110, where we talked about calmer, easier, happier parenting of girls. Today, I'm happy that Noelle is back talking about calmer, easier, happier parenting of boys. With mothers often being the dominant caregiver, we think and act in a girl way with our families because, yep, we are girls. Good for our girls and boys, but there are some things, if we knew about our boys, would bring us so much more connection and understanding between the two of us. Men and women have a vital role in raising calmer, easier, happier parenting of boys. So if you're a parent of a boy or boys, have boys in the family, or you're just interested in the ways to change the dynamic in your home, stay tuned. After the interview, I'll be recommending some resources on boys. While you're listening, check out Noel's site, calmerparenting.co.uk. I hope you'll stick around and listen to the show this week. Thanks, and I'll be right back after this short break with the interview.
Hi, this is Amanda Morgan from Not Just Cute, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Today I'm talking to Noelle Janice Norton, teacher, trainer, speaker, learning and behavioural specialist who has developed a practical, solution-focused approach parenting program called Calmer, Easier, Happier Parenting. This program teaches parents a curriculum of parenting skills that help children and adolescents become more cooperative, confident, motivated, self-reliant, and considerate. Today, we're talking about boys and play. Welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be here.
It's good to have you back on the show. Last time we talked about girls, and today the focus is on boys. So let's dive right into the questions because I've got quite a few today for you.
Okay.
What's unique and special about boys and how they play?
Well, every mum of a boy knows that boys have a lot of energy. They're moving most of the time. And their play is very active. More action and less talking. Whereas with girls, they're quite keen to sit around and draw and chat and play with dolls. Boys are all over the place, and they're up and they're down, and they're playing, and they're play fighting, and they're imagining scenarios. All of that is very wonderful if you've got the space for it. But in a cramped flat or house, with boys underfoot, it can be very frustrating and irritating.
So what are your plans for changing that? What could we do to make that situation better? Because we can't necessarily move house.
No. Well, first we need to recognize that this is the case, that boys are not likely to be as quiet and calm and focused as girls. at the same age. So we shouldn't expect them to be. We can help them to be, and we can guide them to be, but we shouldn't be annoyed that they're not. So that's the first thing, is to change our own expectations of boys so that we're not annoyed with them. And particularly moms have a tendency to get annoyed because moms have never been boys, and they can't really imagine why boys need to be tearing around all the time. Dads are much better often at recognizing that boys will be boys. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that boys need many, many opportunities to let off steam. And the best place for that, of course, is outside. One of the things I frequently recommend is that on the way home from school, parents drop into a park and let their boys just race around and climb and shout and everything for 20 minutes, half an hour, maybe even more if you've got the time, so that by the time you get home, they're a bit more worn out. And sometimes parents will say to me, well, I don't have the time in the afternoon to do that. But actually, it ends up saving you time because everything else will go more smoothly. Bath time will be less of a problem. Homework will be less of a problem. Dinner or tea will be less of a problem. Siblings will be squabbling less, and bedtime will be calmer and easier and happier if we make sure that boys expend that natural energy that they have.
That's a really good tip. And I remember, I have three boys, and I remember a good friend of mine saying to me when I was having my second one that I was feeling very worn out. And we had to travel to get to different places, and so it wasn't, we couldn't necessarily walk home from a lot. And she would say that you should just stop by a park, just drive to the park, go and do that first, and then go home. Don't ever just go home. And I remember her saying that to this day. That's just such good advice. Is even if you have to drive, go drive somewhere else where you can walk a little bit and they can run around and let that steam off, because boy, do they need it.
Yes, exactly. They need it.
Yes. I didn't. I had 101 things that I could think of that I could have been doing. But
it's actually quite a good time when children are playing in the park. It's quite a good time for the mom to sit with a book or with some knitting or something. It's enforced relaxation time.
Oh, absolutely.
Because otherwise, you would just find something else to do and you just keep being busy.
It's true. What should we consider when raising boys then?
Well, an important thing to consider is that boys develop in certain areas more slowly than girls. Their language acquisition is usually slower. Their fine motor skills, which isn't just about writing and drawing, it's also about things like zips and buttons and tucking in their shirt, getting dressed. And their social skills are often less mature at the same age as a girl's. So because most children are raised by their mums, and mums are girls and have never been boys, as I mentioned, mothers don't often really understand what boys are like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's something that I experienced when I had my first. I was a bit like, well, you have to be able to do it like this. And even though I have one brother, you know, it doesn't prepare you for having your own little son and you being the main caregiver, knowing what to do.
Exactly.
So what would you suggest to do? I mean, I read books and I talked to other mums that had boys who kind of schooled me and gently, you know, said, you'll understand soon enough. and raised me in a way that I could understand what I should be doing with my son. But what can you give us for practical advice?
Well, in addition to educating yourself, as you did, I would say just start with your boy where he is. So let's say that at a given age, he's not terribly verbal. We can enhance his verbal ability by extending what he says. So if he says a sentence with four words, you can say the same thing back to him, but with more words. So for example, if he says, see the giraffe, a young child might say. You can say, yes, we're looking at the giraffe. The giraffe is so tall.
Yeah.
And this might seem obvious, but in a way it isn't obvious because we're busy. We have a foot-long to-do list, and we forget that our children need those interactions more than they need a tidy house. So one of the things that we can do is not just talk to our children, because everybody knows to do that, but to extend what they say, to make it deeper in a way or more interesting. Another thing that we can do is help boys to make eye contact, because they naturally don't do it as well as girls. And one way to do it is that when your son says, Mom, and he's probably not even looking at you, he's looking at his Legos at the time, instead of saying, yes, dear, just stop what you're doing and look at him so that when he looks up, he'll see that you're paying attention to him and you're waiting for him. But he's had to look at you to make that eye contact in order to say something to you.
That's a good tip. That's a good tip. What about fidgeting, focus, and competition? These are three things that are big in my household at the moment. When they are sitting down at a table to do an activity, at whatever age they are, whether they're under three or a little over, they find it hard to sit and stay on the chair.
One of the things that really helps children to focus is knowing exactly what the activity is all about, and also knowing how long they're supposed to be doing it. Now, let's say they're sitting down drawing, and there isn't really a supposed to about it. But you can think to yourself, well, usually 10 minutes is their maximum, so I'm going to stretch this to about 12 or 13 minutes, and set a timer for just a few minutes more than you know they can usually do it, and beforehand say to them, we're going to draw, or whatever the activity is, until the timer goes ding. So even if you want to stop, you can't stop yet. We're going to keep going. And then you turn it into what I call a think-through by asking the child to tell you. So then you would say, when can we get up? And your child will say, when we hear the timer. And then you can say, so what are we going to do until we hear the timer? And your child will say, draw, or whatever it is. And then you can say, even if you feel like getting up, where do you have to stay until you hear the timer? And they'll say, I have to stay sitting down. And what this does, these think-throughs before the fact, is they very painlessly get the child to visualize themselves doing what it is that you want them to do. And being able to sit and focus is very important because, well, for one thing, for school. As soon as children enter school, they're expected to be able to focus. The school isn't going to teach them how. The school expects them already to be able to. And once again, most teachers are females, so they know what it's like to be a girl and to be able to focus. And they don't really know what it's like to be a boy, where your body is just itching to move around all the time. So parents need to take on the job of teaching boys gradually, gently, over time, how to focus better and better.
That's brilliant. So you actually have to train your children at home in a way, but it's not a training program that every single time that they have to be done, but it's something that you need to instruct and share and show.
Yeah, how... I would do it once a day at least. Once a day, have an activity where they need to stay sitting for a bit longer than they usually do. And over time, quite quickly usually, children just get into the habit of it. And pretty soon, the timer will go ding and they'll say, oh, can I keep doing this? And then, of course, you'll give them lots of praise.
Yes, super. The last couple were competition and play fighting. This is something I know that many families struggle with, knowing how much you should allow. We know that in the world there is competition, so we should allow them to have competition. But boy, can they get competitive between themselves. And then that can lead to real fighting, but also the play fighting and wrestling that children love to do, where they're just rolling around on the floor and jumping on each other.
So let me talk about the play fighting first. Boys need to play fight. It's in their DNA. It's how, in terms of evolution, boys turned into men. They learned the skills that cavemen, let's say, needed. So there's no way that you can get boys to not want to rough and tumble. Ordinarily, there's no problem with siblings doing that, even if they're different ages, as they're likely to be, unless you happen to have twins. And the reason there isn't doesn't have to be a problem is because siblings don't actually want to hurt each other. When they get angry, they'll lash out, but they don't actually want to maim and wound. So when parents get angry with children when they hurt each other, it's because the parents are forgetting that it's an accident, that the boy meant to do something but didn't actually mean to hurt. Right. An interesting thing is that the more parents get involved in squabbles and fights between siblings, the worse the squabbles and the fights get. So you can expect that a play fight will have some moments of somebody getting either their feelings or some part of their body hurt. And just expect that and accept it and don't think there's anything wrong. Because we don't want our children to think that they're so fragile that they can't handle getting hurt.
Right.
And once your children go to school, they will be involved in lots of tussles on the playground, where if you were there, you might want to intervene, but you're not there. And by the time they come home from school and you say, "How was school?" and they say, "Fine," they will have completely forgotten about those. It's just a part of life. So the short answer is, let kids play fight. If you're worried that it's actually going to turn into something terrible, then what I recommend is just go and stand very close to them. And something very interesting happens when you do that. Usually, they will de-escalate. They'll start to stop. And that's because children don't yet have a fully developed conscience. So they don't remember or particularly care about rules, especially when they're in the flood of excitement or emotion. But the parent's presence reminds them of the rules and the values of the household. The parent's presence functions in a way as their conscience. So by going there and standing very close without saying a word, just standing very close, it reminds the child, "Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be gentle. Oh, yes, I'm supposed to let go if he's crying." Or, "Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to not hurt." And they will start to stop. And as soon as they start to stop, even though they may not have stopped altogether, and even though they may not be stopping as quickly as you want, as soon as they start to stop, you've got something you can praise. So you could say something like, "I can see you both want that toy, and you're pulling, but nobody is hitting." Ooh, so you're acknowledging that there's a real feeling there, but you're not making anybody wrong.
That's good.
The temptation is to get annoyed with the older boy.
Yes.
Because he's older, so he should know better. But the thing to know about sibling rivalry is that the older one may be mature in every other way, but in terms of sibling rivalry, the older one is likely to be more jealous. Because after all, the older one had the parents to himself. He was the apple of their eye, the center of their universe, for, well, for at least 9 months, right, until the next one came along, probably a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And even though he's long forgotten that time, it's still in him that he wants to be the center. Whereas the second child, or third or fourth, is born into a world of children. They never had, therefore don't miss, that feeling of being the only child.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, so it's usually the older one that's more jealous and more competitive.
Yes. Yes, that's how it can be in our family.
Mm-hmm. When children are competitive, they sometimes insult each other. You know, say, that's stupid, that's babyish, only babies do that, oh, that's rubbish. It's very important that we not allow older children to talk to younger children like that. But simply telling them to stop after they've done it isn't going to work, because they've already done it.
Yes.
And they feel told off. And when they feel told off, it makes them even more angry and more likely to pick on the younger one. So what I recommend, if there is quite a bit of competition within the family between the siblings, is what I recommend, among other things, is that each child, but particularly the older child, have what I call special time alone with each parent. Because that's what that older child really is missing, even though they don't know it. So that's time alone with a parent, particularly the same gender parent. That's very important. And time that's not in front of a screen, that's not spending money on your child, that's not out giving him a treat. I mean, those things are fine for once in a while. But special time isn't that kind of special. That's not what I mean. It's special because it's just the parent and the child doing something that you both enjoy.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be a lot of time either.
No.
But it needs to be as much as you can. It needs to be frequent. Every day, of course, is best if you can. It needs to be predictable so that the child knows when it's going to happen. And it needs to be what I call labeled, which means the child needs to know that this is something the parent is choosing to do. They're choosing to set aside time. It's not just a fluke. So, for example, you might take your child to the supermarket with you. And that can be special time. That can be a lovely bonding experience. But unless you actually say to the child something like, I'm so glad that you and I came to the supermarket by ourselves and we left the others behind because I really enjoy talking to you. If we don't say something like that, the child will just think, oh, well, I'm going to the supermarket. They're not really thinking, oh, my dad wants to be with me.
Oh, that's a good point. It's a good one to put there. I'm glad that you're talking about special time because I wanted to talk about the father or the male role model and how important that is. Your book we mentioned is called Calmer, Easier, Happier Parenting. And I'm looking at the chapter on preparing for success. Mm-hmm. And you talk a bit about special time that you've just mentioned, and especially the father and the role model. I just wanted to read a little extract from it.
Sure.
He said, for a child, the most important person in the universe is the same gender parent. This is the person your child assumes she will grow up to be, she or he. When the most important person in her world clearly wants to be with her, enjoys spending time with her, and makes sure to schedule this special time, it does wonders for a child's confidence and self-esteem. But this can be a problem for boys who often spend far more time with their mothers than with their fathers. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I know this is something that we've been doing in our family for a while with all three of our boys. We've set out a special time that my husband spends time with them, and they decide what they're going to go and do, and they go off and do it. And the favorite activity, because we're big readers in this house, is to go to the library or to go to the bookshop, where they get to cruise through all the books, and then they get maybe a milkshake at the end or something that they all share together, this one really big Sunday or something that they do together. We try and do that at least once a month.
And is this your husband with all three kids or with each of the boys individually?
Each individually, that he'll take them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So because we've got three and his schedule is mad complicated, we try and do it once a month with each of them. And if we can do more, then we do more. But that's a definite, each month he will definitely do one session with each of them. And if we can do more, then that's perfect. But I'm curious to how you go about setting that up. For us, we did that very much at the very beginning. I had a lovely bunch of ladies who schooled me in this idea. So we started right at the very beginning when we had babies. So he just took them off and did stuff then. But how do you do it if you're doing it now? I'm talking about the listeners that are listening right now. Maybe they're thinking, I want to do this. How can we start this conversation with our partner without it being confrontational? Because we know that they need to spend more time, but we know that they're not spending time for all sorts of reasons. But how do we start that whole conversation? What would be your practical suggestions for that?
Well, one practical suggestion is to, instead of criticizing, for the mom to praise the dad. Because when you live with somebody and you have a lot of expectations, it's very easy to get annoyed because people aren't living up to exactly the right way we think they should be doing things. And dads need appreciation and acknowledgement and praise. Now, so do moms, of course, but right now we're talking about how to get dads on board. And dads are much more likely to listen to any suggestion or request or recommendation when they feel they're being appreciated. So that's the first thing. And it's not an easy thing to do. When I recommend to mums that they praise their husbands, an interesting thing happens is that people giggle self-consciously and nervously, and they say, I don't think I could do that. Or they say, he'd think that was weird. We need to praise our partner so much that it doesn't feel weird, that they come to expect it. They come to know how much we appreciate it. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, in particular, for moms to praise dads in relation to the children. Because often dads get the impression that moms think they're doing it wrong. And of course, if the mom is with the kids most of the time, is making the rules, knows what the consequences are, knows the routines, and sometimes the dad comes home and it's almost like he's a bit of a stranger in his own house. He's not quite sure what the rules are. And he might do something and the kids will say, "Ooh, mom doesn't let us do that. Ooh, you're going to get in trouble with mom." Now, that's no good for the dad's self-respect. Mm. So even though a dad may not be home much, both the mother and the father have to make the rules together. It can't be the mother saying, "I think we should do this," and the dad says, "Yes, dear, okay." Even if the dad isn't going to be around much, he's got to be equal in making the rules. The other thing is that some dads love taking their children out on little adventures, and others don't. They feel nervous about it. So it might be a whole lot easier to start with having a special time at home. Because that's really what it should be anyway. It's lovely to have these special treats once a month, but once a month isn't enough to have that one-on-one time. So really, you want every day, if possible, for dads to spend 10, 15, 20 minutes with each child. And of course, there are some days when it's just not possible. But there are a lot of days when it is possible if you rearrange things. So, for example, many children love spending time with their dad in the morning before the dad goes off for work. But it means the dad getting up a bit earlier so that he's got time to do that. Not a whole lot earlier, but a bit earlier. And most dads are willing to do that once they understand how much their sons need that consistent input. And the dad does not have to be doing anything fancy, just chatting, just doing whatever he'd be doing, but doing it with his son.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, and you talked about praise a little earlier. Is there an example that you can give that we could use to praise our partners?
Sure. For example, a lot of times moms feel that the dads shout too much. So if something happens and the dad doesn't shout, the mom could say, I really appreciate that you didn't shout, even though what he did was very annoying. So you're acknowledging that he felt like shouting and he had a good reason to, but you're praising him that he didn't.
No, that's good. That's
and
good.
Certainly, you can appreciate and praise any time that they spend with the children, not just because it relieves you of the burden, but also because it means so much to the child.
Right. No, that's good. Finding a way to say the right thing is important. Yeah, I can see that.
And one of the things that helps parents to be able to praise each other is when parents spend time alone together. And everybody hears about having a weekly date night, which I think is very, very useful. But there's something else that we can do that doesn't cost any money, and that's what I call a nightly date half hour. So between the time that you're both home in the evening and the time when you go to bed, instead of just filling it with the washing up and the emails, take a half an hour where it's just the two of you together, not in front of a screen. It's like a little mini date. And you can chat, or you can listen to music, or you can just hold hands, or do something a bit more exciting than that. Whatever you want to do during that time. Because otherwise, very soon, the marriage has turned into being like housemates.
Yes, yeah.
So this little nightly date half hour puts back that specialness of actually wanting to be with your partner.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I'm thinking these are really good suggestions. And I know that after the show that there'll be lots of people that want to go and bring up these issues with their partners. Mm-hmm. There'll be single parents as well. And there are also families that have partners that live away from home during the week,
yes,
or get up very early and go and come back very late. You know, how it's trying to find a solution to your family's circumstance, because everything is so individual. My family setup is different to, you know, my friend across the road and so on and so on. How do we establish these rules and routines and the consequences with our partners? How do we have this conversation with them? I see that you say have a date with them so that you've got those warm, fuzzy feelings still going on with them. Mm-hmm. But then these nitty gritty, you know, child A is just not behaving well. We need to do something about them. What can we do? They're quite difficult conversations to really start. When do you do them and how do you get those things done?
What I recommend is something that we call here solution talk. And what it consists of is spending 15 minutes maximum on choosing one thing that's a problem, even if it's just a mild problem. And for 15 minutes, both parents take turns thinking of a possible solution. And then you both write down all the solutions. And nobody's allowed to say, oh, that wouldn't work. Everybody writes down the solutions. And then you look at them and see, well, which of them could you do? And it's important that you not go over 15 minutes with this, because otherwise you'll start losing the focus of solutions and you'll just be reiterating about the problem.
Right.
It's also important not to do it after 9:30 at night, because when you're tired, you know how you get. We
yeah.
all get crabby and more irritable and more critical. So we recommend this 15 minutes of solution talk every day. Now, some families can do it every day, some can't. That would be the ideal. But even if a parent is out of town, you can do the 15 minutes on the phone.
Yep.
And it helps the mother to feel not alone with the problems, and it helps the dad to feel included. So this 15 minutes of solution talk is very useful. And in case you think that you won't need to do it very long because there aren't that many problems, actually, you will find that until they leave home, there will be things to discuss. Because that's the nature of life. There are always things that we want to tweak.
And the importance of establishing rules, routines, and consequences from a mother's point of view is that I think of these rules, routines, and consequences from a female mother point of view, and we want to have the male input as
definitely,
well.
Definitely, definitely. And if the dad is absent for any reason, then we do need to have, for our boys in particular, a responsible adult male role model. So it could be an uncle, it could be a family friend, it could even be a minister or a teacher, it can even be a mentor that the school organizes, but the boy needs to have that input from a good functioning, responsible adult male who can model, really, can show what it's like to be a man. Because otherwise, the images in the media start to take over their brains, and then they're led down the wrong path.
I think I like the way you said that we need to do that, but also we need to remember that we can start very young with that. I hear a lot of people talking about mentoring, and we feel that it's just for older children who
are not just for teens, seven
or 12 or older. But if you establish that very young, then this person grows with the child, or people, just having lots of different people. We're a military family, so we move around quite a lot. But making sure that you have different people involved in the boys' lives so that they can see other men, other boys, how other things are doing. I think that that's really important too.
And assuming there is a dad around, for the dad to take the boy to work so that the boy can visualize what the dad does all day. Because since the boy thinks he's going to grow up to be his dad, then we want him to see his dad as somebody who's doing something important and useful, whatever it might be.
Yeah. You touched earlier on think-throughs, and
yes,
you gave us a really good example of that. And can you tell us why that is really important to boys with think-throughs?
So think-throughs are about parents asking questions rather than lecturing. Rather than explaining and justifying, the parent asks the question and the child's brain has to come up with the answer. And it's important, particularly for boys, because they're often good at visualizing but not very good at putting it into words. So they need to be able to put into words, for example, let's say you want to establish a bedtime rule, let's say, because we know that boys have more bedtime issues than girls. Well, boys have more behavior issues, full stop, than girls. But let's choose bedtime for this example. If you were to say to your boy, after the light is out, where do you have to stay? And then he's going to say, in bed. And when he says in bed, he is seeing himself in bed, which makes it easier for his body to stay in bed without him even having to try. Just the fact that he's visualizing it starts to program his brain that, of course, you stay in bed. Then you could say, and when you've got the covers on you, where should your arms and legs be? So the child has to think about that for a little moment, and he's visualizing it, and he might say, under the covers. And you say, that's right, your arms and your legs have to be under the covers. So he's seeing himself in bed, under the covers, and that becomes easier for him to do it. So it's not enough for him to visualize it. That's the first step, but he actually needs to say it, because the saying will help him to visualize it. So in my book, I have a lot more about think-throughs and about other strategies as well. And I wanted to just tell your listeners that I've just been commissioned to write my next book, which will be coming out in a year, and that one is called Calmer, Easier, Happier, Living with Boys.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes, so I'm already in the process of writing that one. And the book that I wrote this year, because I seem to write one a year, the one that I've written this year, which is coming out next month, is Calmer, Easier, Happier, Homework. And that's out 14th of February. And we know that boys have more trouble with homework and with school and with behaving in school and with respecting the authority of the teacher, etc., than girls.
Oh, that will be a good one to have on the table to refer to, I'm sure. That'll be good. Thank you for sharing those.
You're welcome.
The last question I wanted to talk about is directly related to play. It's really easy to slip into the role of becoming our child's entertainer. We start when they're very young, maybe they're the first child, and so we do all the playing with them, and it's frankly, it's just exhausting. But then when you've started this way, it's really difficult to switch and know how to switch out of that particular role. You have an entire chapter, chapter 16, devoted to playing independently,
yes,
training, self-reliance, and problem solving. So how can we stop being entertainers?
Well, the first thing would be to recognize that it's not good for your child. Mm-hmm. Because children need to become self-reliant. And for one thing, this is not the only reason, but for one thing, if they're not self-reliant in their play, they're not going to be self-reliant in their schoolwork and their homework. Because when children are playing by themselves, lots of little problems crop up, like they can't fit the this into the that, or they can't find something, or something, and they have to solve the problem themselves. When there's a parent around to solve it, the child develops what's called learned helplessness, where they think they can't do things. So both for play and for work, we want children to know that they're capable of solving the inevitable little problems that always crop up. Once parents know that it's not good for the child, then they're much more motivated to train the child to play independently. And the way that I recommend is think back to how long can your child play by himself. Let's say it's only 5 minutes. Then you would set a timer for 8 minutes. And at least once a day, and maybe twice a day, you would have a time when you say to your child, you're going to play over here, or you're going to play in your room, and I'm going to be over here, and you're going to play by yourself. I'm not going to talk to you until the timer goes ding. And when the timer goes ding, then we can play together, or then we can have dinner, or then we can do something. So the child knows that the parent isn't going to engage. You're not telling the child not to talk to you, because they would probably break that rule immediately because they're used to doing that. Yeah. So don't make that rule. Just make a rule for yourself that during those 8 minutes, for example, you're not going to talk with them. And because it's actually natural for children to be able to play by themselves, if you think about it, infants can do it. You know, they just look at their hands.
Yes.
It doesn't take long for children to learn how, but you need to practice it consistently. Now, there's more things that I suggest in the book, but that's one of the important ones. And, of course, make sure that the child has access during that time to things that he really likes to do. And if there's something that he especially likes to do, have it be special just for the playing alone time, rather than it's just in his room and he can play with it whenever he wants. So then he'll be more engaged with it during the playing alone time. And boys do, in general, have more of a problem with this than girls. And I don't think that it's anything biological. I think it's that parents tend to play with boys more. And girls, because they can sit and they're not so active, they can entertain themselves more.
Right.
I think.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not sure the reason, but in any case, parents can quite easily, if they're consistent, if they do it every day, can quite easily guide boys into this habit of playing alone and enjoying it.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you've given us a lot of really practical solutions to problems that we encounter with raising boys and play today. And it's been great talking to you.
Thank you. About I've enjoyed
these,
it.
About all of these ideas. I think we can worry, as I know I did certainly at the beginning when I started having boys, that everything just seems to be problem based, especially if you have friends that have all girls, because you can see the contrast between what's going. And I would just encourage listeners, especially if you have friends that have just girls, that you make sure you find mums with boys, if you have boys, to connect with, because there's nothing better than having other people that are going through similar experiences to really give you perspective on what's going on in your own home.
Yes, and if your boy is just hanging around with girls, it's going to seem as if he's less than.
Yes.
And you don't want that feeling, because
no.
It's just not true. Boys
yes.
have their own set of strengths, but they do have some ways in which they're trickier.
Yes, you're right. Today I've been talking to Noelle Janice Norton, learning and behavioral specialist and parenting expert and creator of Calmer, Easier, Happier Parenting. You can find out more about her parenting programs, courses, CDs, DVDs and books by visiting her site, calmerparenting.co.uk. Noelle talked about her new book that's coming out on Calmer, Easier, Happier Homework that's coming out in March, so you need to look out for that too. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Dr. Laura Hutchison of Play Doctor Mom, and you are listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. As a mum of boys, I found it really fascinating learning how to connect better with my boys. I'm excited about the new book that Noelle has coming out next year and the one that she talked about for February. I know she has a DVD if you're interested in her site. It's on calmerparenting.co.uk. I've not seen it, but it looks really good. And based on what we've talked about here, it looks like a really good watch. If you've seen the DVD, let us know by dropping us a note in the comments of this show by going to raisingplayfultots.com/125 or going to raisingplayfultots.com/voicemail and leaving a message. I have Calmer, Easier, Happier Parenting here, and it's a brilliant resource to get you not just thinking, but changing. I often hear people say the definition of crazy is doing the same things over and over again and thinking that you'll get a different outcome. I know in parenting we can sometimes feel stuck. We don't like what's happening in one area, and we actually may know what to do, but getting from here to there is a lot harder, especially as we're all such different families. Solutions and ideas are around. We just have to be willing to try things out, and this book has some lovely ideas. I particularly like the solution talk idea and how to get talking with your partner, bringing them on board and co-creating a family that you want. My Amazon affiliate link for the book is raisingplayfultots.com/karmaparenting, or you can go to the shop of your favorite book place and look for Calmer, Happier, Easier Parenting. The link will also be in the show notes. I love reading. I'm big on underlining, and I use those big fat post-it notes to highlight pages that I like. My husband just recently showed me those smaller post-it notes, and I like those a lot better now, and I can litter those all over the books instead. And it's particularly good since the boys regularly hijack my stacks of post-it notes. But they're not so interested in the little ones, so it wins out for me. While the boys were younger, I tried to read as much as I could about boys learning and playing. I was part of a few mums of boys groups, and I had a book club where we read and talked about raising boys. I've heard shows about raising boys on Parents Journal and What Really Matters. So if you're interested in knowing how you can connect with your boys, whether by yourself or the big things like why they do what they do, it really helped to understand the really big picture of who they are and who they were becoming and how I could help or in fact hinder them doing that. It's really fascinating when you look at it. So here's a short list. There's bound to be others. In fact, If you know of other books, I would be really interested to know, and I'm sure everybody else would be too. Tell us which books you've read or have influenced you, especially to do with boys. And if you have books to do with girls, then you can leave those in the show notes at show number 110. First up is Raising Boys by Steve Bidlioff. I think that's how you say his name, Bidlioff. It's quite an easy read and it covers the basics. And if you're interested in learning more, you have the ideas and the areas to actually find out more about those areas yourself. It's, like I said, an easy read. You can read it probably all in one sitting, has really simple terms, and it really eases you into the whole idea. And you can see if it's something that you'd really be interested in and taking further. It's also easy enough for caregivers that are looking after the children to be able to read really easily, including our husbands or partners. I bought Manhood also by Steve Bidlioff, same author, for my husband. I liked all the stories that were in it. He picked up a few of the stories a few times and looked at the book a couple of times, but he wasn't a big fan of reading it from cover to cover. The summary at the end of the chapters were quite good to have as conversation starters. You'd have to reword some of them because the topics are quite personal and not everybody likes to talk about some of the topics that are raised in that particular book, although guys, I'm sure, would have a real insight into themselves and parenting if they got to read it. Michael Gurion has a book called The Mind of Boys, which is the second book in the series. The first one is called The Wonder of Boys. The second one, The Mind of Boys, is 300 plus pages of joy to read. Listen to the different parts of this book. Protecting the Minds of Boys, Starting Boys Out in Boy-Friendly Environments, Teaching School Curricula in Boy-Friendly Ways, and Helping Boys Who Need Extra Help. This is one of the first books that I read, and I regularly reread sections along with other boy books, like Boys and Girls Learn Differently, which is also by the same author, Michael Gurion. I led a small group on The Purpose of Boys, which is the third book in the series by Michael Gurion. So you had The Wonder of Boys, then you have The Mind of Boys, and then the last one that I know of is The Purpose of Boys. And that book is all about helping our sons find meaning, significance, and direction in their lives. There's lots of food for thought there. While I'm not quite at that stage yet, it's interesting to see what I'm doing now and trying to align that with the daily life that I want in the future. So our oldest is 9 and we're interested in exploring things like rites of passage, supporting brain differences, motivations of different boys, creating a 3-family system, forming purposeful communities for African American boys, fixing the mismatch between schools and the purpose of boys. Having these conversations slowly and over time has been really interesting, trying to develop our family idea, exploring ideas and seeing really what fits with our family, what can be adapted and what things we just don't wish to do. It was either on Manic Mummies or maybe it was What Really Matters, I'm not sure now. I heard an interview with Dr. Leonard Sachs on his book, Why Gender Matters, which shared lots of studies and relatable content on both girls and boys and what we can do when we know. I love how practical that book was, particularly changing science into easily digestible ideas that we can understand. He's also done lots of corrections and added lots of new information as research has come to bear out some of his opinions and disprove some of the things that were put as hypothesis before. I started a book group about his next book that he did, which was Boys Adrift, which I would really recommend that you have a look at if you can. Scientific explanations have a really bad rep on many news sites because they take things really simply and simplify them and generalize it so much that it can feel as if it's not really true. So sometimes you do have to decipher things, but with this book, you get to see the cited research so you can look further if that's what you want to do, and you can gain another perspective. I recently heard an interview this week with Lisa Jo Baker from Tales of a Gypsy Mama on the podcast Inspired to Action. It was episode number 4, where they talked about a new book to me called Wild Things, The Art of Nurturing Boys. And she also recommends How Do You Tuck in a Superhero? And Other Delightful Mysteries of Raising Boys. She has a super recommendation list that's well worth having a look and see. I'll leave a link for those in the show notes. So that's 2 new books for me to check out. I've also heard about the book Bringing Up Boys by Dr. James Dobson. I've not read it, but a friend who has liked it a lot, and she said that it would be really suitable for traditional families with 2-parent households. It's really worth seeking out same gender setups in your community if you haven't already done so. I got to know a lovely family who were about 4 years ahead of us with 3 boys in similar age gaps. Just being able to talk to this mum and gaining her perspective and listening to her counsel and advice really helped guide my mind to thinking about things, issues, and really getting perspective for my little family, and it still does. That's not to say that you should only associate with people who have the same gender combinations as you. But if you don't already, then you really should seek them out. You'll not be sorry. So we're going to have a quick shout out now about what you've all been doing and sharing. I asked on the Facebook page this week about my child prefers to use blank when colouring in pictures, and I love the suggestions that we got back there from Laura, Jen, Francis, Nanette. There's also some fun suggestions for my youngest's first play date that we had this week. We had snow this week, so I've also shared some ice ideas from the lovely sun hats and welly boots, and some simple sensory activities from Kate at Pickle Bums. Thanks for liking Raising Playful Tots on Facebook, and we've just passed 1,100 people. Over in our new community on Google+, I'm seeing more familiar faces like Sandra and Carolyn and Claire from our community. Do drop by and introduce yourself into the slow parenting, simple parenting community. Our intro question is, what are you wanting to do more slowly this year? Inside the community, there's lots of conversations, and one of the conversations we've been talking about has been about unsolicited parenting advice. Then there's super mum or super tired, done is better than perfect, how we navigate a bad patch, simple gestures to show we care for our children, 15 minutes outside every single day and how that's going for Keris of Rainy Day Mum, and many, many more. So why don't you pop on over, start a conversation on slow parenting and simple parenting topics right there. The link to that is gplus.to, that's google+.to/slowparenting. That's the short link and it will take you straight there. We're having our first live show on Sunday night at 8:30 p.m. GMT, which I believe is 3:30 Eastern Standard Time, and I'm inviting you to come. There's going to be details about that coming up today. You need to check out the show notes regularly to see what we're going to have there. I'm going to finalize those plans. I'm still working on a few of them right now, so I can't give you everything right now and who exactly is going to come. At the moment, we've got 3 people that will be all together live, and we'll be talking about something really exciting. So if you check out the Facebook page or the Google+ page, or you come to the show notes, you'll be able to find out the details for this first live show on Sunday. So this has been a packed show. We're up to almost an hour here on play, parenting about boys, books, hangouts and places to hang out together. I'm really glad that you found the time today to listen to the show. It's always lovely to hear from you guys, your thoughts, your reactions, and your ideas. If you've not done so, check out the survey where you can share what you like about the show and you can answer a few short questions. And that's at raisingplayfultots.com/surveys. That's raisingplayfultots.com/surveys with an S. If you love the show and you found value in it, would you do me a favour and go over to iTunes and give us a review? I'm so excited that we have two new reviews over there from Betsy1112 and JustMe103, bringing us up to 10 reviews. Yay! Use the link raisingplayfultots.com/iTunes page. If you're a fan of Raising Playful Tots and you like what you've heard, whether that's today or any of the other shows previously, we'd love it if you would share some of that love by visiting raisingplayfultots.com/love. What this will do is it will write a tweet in your Twitter feed that will say something like, you're listening to this podcast, and it links back here so that you can share it. You get to check the tweet before it goes out. Sending it is really an easy and quick way to share the show. And thank you for those of you that have done that. If you'd like to comment on the show because you've got something that stood out to you, you related to something, you've got a book recommendation, you've just got something that you want to say, then please go over to the show notes at raisingplayfultots.com/125. That's 125, because that's the number of our show. Scroll down to the comment section and drop your comment there. Or you could use the free voicemail, raisingplayfultots.com/feedback. You could always leave the last three blogs that you've read featuring play or parenting. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 125. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!